This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, it is 4:32. I'll call this meeting of the University Assembly to order. With that, we will begin with our roll call, and I will turn it over to TC to begin roll call.
Gina Phillips.
Here.
Valerie Hamer.
I was not sure if she would make it, so she did reach out ahead. Excuse.
Marcy Bendel?
Here.
Richard Bendel?
Here.
John Cade?
Here.
Nicholas Yenna? Keith DeRosa?
Excuse, we'll be late.
Jacob Bice? Greg Forsberry?
Here.
Thomas Fox?
Here.
Kristen Hanley?
Here.
David Hyde?
Here.
Deborah Howell?
Here.
Carolyn Levine?
Here.
Manaya Lewis? Amelia Nunez?
Here.
Jan Richards?
Here.
Damien Sharp?
Here.
Jessica Wither?
Here.
That's 14, the quorum.
All right, we do have quorum. We're going to bring some questions. All right. We'll do the land acknowledgement here. We have that right still, but I didn't. Cornell University is located on the traditional homeland of the Gaigono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gaigono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy perceived the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. I will now call for late additions to the agenda. Seeing none, I would entertain a couple of minor adjustments to the agenda here. To note that the email version was updated to note the change in title to the Cornell faculty teach-in, and I will ask for Richard to state that for the record.
The title?
Yes.
Academic Freedom, Global Hubs, and Cornell's Involvement in the People's Republic of China. And we will circulate the memo that went with this after the meeting.
Thank you, Richard. I will also ask for us to adjust the agenda, and that the new business on the visit from the university relations team was actually not a new business item, but was part of the agenda. So I'd entertain a motion to move that from new business to business of the day.
Sure, I'll motion for that.
So a motion, do we have a second? Second. Motion by Duncan, seconded by Ian. Any objections? Seeing none, we'll move that to business of the day. Any other calls for late additions? With that, we'll move to the approval of the meeting minutes from the March 8th meeting. I would entertain a motion for any adjustments or approval.
Approval.
Motion to approve by Thomas. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Duncan. Thank you. Any objections? Seeing none, the meeting minutes are approved. With that, we will move now to our open forum here. Turn to Richard Bensel.
We moved that to the.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm just going by my order here. Thank you. We're gonna move here now to our presentation, the 2021 Local Economic Snapshot, brought to us by Kate Sutron from Cornell University Community Relations. Kate, let me just make you a co-host so you are able to share your screen.
Great. And
welcome, Kate.
Thanks. So thank you, Brandon, for the introduction and to making time for me on your agenda today. I should be about 15 minutes and with plenty of time for questions. As Brandon mentioned, I work in the Office of Community Relations at Cornell, and I'm going to try to get my PowerPoint up here, play from start. Are you all seeing my, I'm not getting it to play. There we go. Are you seeing my screen okay now?
All good, thank you.
All good? Okay, then I'll just have to figure out how to advance it. So community relations is part of the Division of University Relations. We work with local governments, with nonprofits, with businesses, and we help folks in the community do their business with Cornell. Not that it doesn't, that it has to come through us, but we're kind of a connecting piece and help folks find both on campus who they need to work with and make sure that the interests of the local community are kept in mind and help people in the local community find their connection point at Cornell as needed. We also have offices that do government relations in Albany and in Washington, D.C. And then the big side of the University Relations House are the communications units, which are strategic communications, brand communications, media relations, and news, which is the Chronicle. This is just, we do have our own website. I just took a screenshot of our homepage. You can find out all kinds of information on our website, so don't be shy about going there. And now this takes us to what I will call our Community Relations 101. It gives an overview of some of the working groups, outreach, and boards and committees that we work with around campus. As you can see, we serve and work with a variety of boards and in nonprofits from the Tompkins County Area Transit to the Cougar Lake Scenic Byway. So we cover quite a bit. We do manage the Cornell's United Way campaign, as well as my colleague Susan sits on the chair of the, or chairs the United Way County Board. So if anyone has interest in local organizations, we probably have an intro for you. We have regular working groups with the city, with the town of Ithaca, with Tompkins County, with a variety of sort of the key municipalities that Cornell owns property and operates in, the city, the town, the county, Dryden, the town of Dryden, and the town and village of Lansing and the village of Cougar Heights. So we regularly pull together Cornell leadership and leadership from municipalities into working groups. And then we do a good bit of outreach, including what I'm here to talk to you today about, which is the local economic snapshot. This document, if you want to see it, is on our website, so I won't spend more time on that. Advance. There we go. Each year we put out a one-page local economic snapshot that we share both internally and externally with key stakeholders. Our Albany and DC offices find it very useful. It's used a lot by the Center for Regional Economic Advancement, CREA, which manages the REV Ithaca Startup Works. We try to share it with as many folks as we can. And I, of course, as a member of the Employee Assembly, know the value of the assemblies in disseminating information across campus. We also present it to the Communicators Network that has the comms leaders from each unit and department on campus coming together. So we try to push that out internally as much as we can. Externally, it goes out through the Chamber of Commerce and local businesses, where we make a presentation to nonprofits, to municipalities, and we share it with other college towns. This year, the 2021 snapshot is the seventh one-page summary snapshot that we've done. For a number of years before that, Cornell did a much longer snapshot that first was a small book and then became a pamphlet. And we really felt that the value of going to a one-pager is that it's straightforward, very user-friendly. The data is kept up to date. It does take us about 6 months after the end of the fiscal year to get it out there, but it does come out while the data is still fairly fresh. And over time, if you just keep doing something, people begin to anticipate it and appreciate it and find new ways to use it. So, oh no, where is my snapshot? Oh my goodness, I skipped right over it. Okay, I hope those of you in the room are able to see this. I will put a link to it in the chat once we're done. So here is the actual snapshot. As you can see, it has a lot of key data metrics like the number of students, the employees, the payroll. We look at visitor and student spending, purchasing and construction. And then we have a few things that are kind of large buckets, which include local contributions to governments and nonprofit organizations and school districts, public transportation public transportation. One data point that surprises some folks and has gone up in recent years are property taxes generated. Oftentimes, I think probably everyone in the room has heard or on the Zoom has heard that Cornell does not pay property taxes, while in fact, Cornell is the third largest taxpayer or payer of property taxes in Tompkins County. Over time, our rank has risen in part because of building strategies of the university, things such as Maplewood, which is a land lease to a private developer, and therefore the building is on the buildings there, that whole complex is on the tax rolls. But also because other businesses have decreased as property holders. The mall used to be a principal property taxpayer in the county and now is way, way down the list. Ahead of Cornell on the list are NYSEG and Dominion Power, which is the what has become of CUGA, is the CUGA Lake Power Plant. Municipal fees vary a little bit from year to year. Separate from taxes, there are many fee for service that we are obliged and happy to pay to our municipal partners, including water, sewer, and stormwater, as well as building permits end up going into this bucket. We break out the locally spent federal, state, and corporate research funding. That is the monies that are brought in that are spent here in Ithaca. And then the last 2 points are the ones that are not on the Cornell fiscal year, but rather on the calendar year, are the venture capital and jobs created by REV, Ithaca Startup Works, and by the McGovern Family Center for Venture Development, two of the business incubators at Cornell. Most of the numbers vary a little bit from year to year, depending on some of them purchasing, construction, and fees fluctuate depending on where Cornell is in building cycles. So you could kind of see it was like a mouse moving through a snake. You could with North Campus, the North Campus residential expansion, you could see first municipal fees were very high for a couple of years while the approval process got underway. And then we saw it in reflected in construction and in purchasing. So this year purchasing is really high and it's still a result of North Campus. So those are three numbers that fluctuate depending on what Cornell is doing. One number has really tanked in the last couple of years and it is visitor spending. Last year for fiscal year 21, which ended June 30th of last summer of 21, we saw a 99% decrease over 2020 in visitor spending. So basically take this $400,000 number and multiply by 100, that's about where we would usually be in terms of visitor spending. So that does reflect that the local community took a pretty sizable hit from COVID and related the loss of related economic activity from Cornell. There were no tours, there were no conferences, there weren't sports events, there were not summer camps happening. So it just all went, and even those who were here, as we know, folks were spending a lot less money out in the community. This 99% decrease from 2020 to 2021 is on top of a 40% decrease in 2020 that resulted just from the first few months of COVID. So over time, we're really hoping, and certainly we'll see a big increase this year. It'll probably take more than fiscal year 22 for visitor spending to rebuild, although some of those related activities have indeed resumed again. But tours, for instance, didn't take place very much in the fall, but are now going again. So I already went through my why the snapshot is who the audiences are and what the key benefits of the snapshot are. So I will, if you'd like, I can leave this screen up, and if folks have questions for me, I am happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, Kate. I would welcome any questions from the assembly members, including those. And just for the record, to let folks know, Eve DeRosa and Jacob Fife have joined via Zoom. You can add them to the roll call. Any questions from the assembly members?
Sorry.
Kate, I'll ask though, as far as the taxes go,
yep.
And as you mentioned, you often hear the conversation around the taxes. How do those look in regards to the amount of land and population that we have here compared to the taxes being paid by us? If you were to look at those top two and their utilization, how do we compare in that realm?
Right. Well, it's tricky, of course, because we're measuring the taxes paid by Cornell, which is a nonprofit. So we do not pay taxes on our properties and holdings that are part of our core academic mission. So we are paying, when people say Cornell doesn't pay taxes, what they are generally referring to is that we don't pay taxes on our core mission. There's no way that we can pay taxes on campus and maintain the educational mission, which is why we have nonprofit status for education higher ed institutions. We do, this property tax number includes taxes paid directly by Cornell and by Cornell-related land lease properties, I would say. Things like Maplewood, the Brezano Center in College Town are on the tax rolls. And a lot of the taxable properties are a little bit further out. So a lot of our taxable properties, we have more taxable properties in the Lansing School District than we do in the Ithaca City School District. To help compensate for some of that, we have the bucket above property taxes, which are contributions to local governments, the Ithaca City School District, nonprofits, and public transit. This does include the payment of the annual negotiated memorandum of understanding with the City of Ithaca. That's about $1.4 million at this point in time, with about half of that earmarked for fire protective service. We also make a voluntary non-negotiated payment each year to the Ithaca City School District of $500,000. The other piece on taxes that doesn't show up directly as taxes is incorporated into student spending, because 48% of the Cornell undergraduates, or it might be 45% now, live off campus, and 95% of our graduate and professional students live off campus. So they are living in privately owned housing that, whether it is owned by them or under a lease arrangement, they're paying property taxes through their rents. So we do have the employees paying property taxes, and we have students paying property taxes on their residential properties as well. So I hope that answers at least a little bit of your question, Brandon.
Thank you very much, Kate. I appreciate that. Yep. I'll recognize Duncan.
excuse me. Sorry about that. Hi there. I'm just kind of curious. You kind of have hinted at this a little bit. I'm just curious what the breakdown looks like from different like governing municipalities. Is it primarily we're paying money towards local government, county, state, federal? What does that kind of look like? So I see all the buckets, and I think it makes sense of where a lot of this money's going. I'm just curious, how much we're directing. I'm just curious where a lot of this is going to those different kind of.
Property taxes, as I've said, some of the property taxes we pay are distributed out. Certainly, if you're a property owner in Tompkins County, you know the biggest chunk is the two big pieces of your property tax bill are the county and your school taxes. And that accounts for about, I'd say, probably it's like 70 to 80% of your tax bill is split between those two. And then the local municipality is the smaller portion of your tax bill at about 25 or 30%. So even if it's, it depends on where the property is located, who gets the local taxes, and which school district the property is in, because there are 9 school districts in Tompkins County. Cornell does not track where its employees live at the level, or its students at the level of local municipalities. We track it by county. So of the 10,203 employees, approximately 73% of those employees live inside of Tompkins County, with 27% commuting in. And that varies if you go into that breakdown, because as you might be getting the sense, there are pages and pages and pages of documentation and spreadsheets behind each of these single lines. Let's see. So the highest percentage of employees of classification of employees who live in the county as faculty at about 97%, and it goes down to 55% of union staff employees are living within the county and 45% out. And I believe Tioga County is the county with the highest representation beyond Tompkins.
Thank you.
So,
go ahead, Kate, and then I have a question coming in.
Sure.
Go ahead, Thomas.
Oh, well, I just recall some years ago there was some real dissatisfaction on the part of the city, I think, in terms of our contribution, the size of it. And I haven't heard anything about that lately. Does that mean it's gone up, or are we just getting along better with them, or what's the history of that?
I do know the history of it. We have our current negotiated memorandum of understanding with the city goes through 2024. So we will very shortly need to begin negotiations between Cornell and the city. There is a negotiated annual increase within the existing agreement. Several years ago, we went to the city with a proposal that would have increased payments, but they opted to wait out until the end to keep the terms that they have. The piece that, again, I'll say doesn't show, and this is not just Cornell students, but of course we have a lot more students. Half of the residents of the city of Ithaca are students living in private houses. So those half of the, you know, approximately half of the property taxes paid on residential properties are paid by folks who are here for as students in higher ed. So there is that's a chunk of support that is going towards the city budget and the school budget and the county budget. But yes, things have been quieter between Cornell and the city lately. We have we try really hard to have an ongoing and productive working relationship with the city of Ithaca. Most of you probably know about 60% of Cornell's main campus is in the city of Ithaca, and about 40% of it is in the town of Ithaca, and then a tiny portion of our main campus is in the village of Cuga Heights. So we work with all three of those municipalities, but the only one of them that has a negotiated annual payment is the city of Ithaca.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions from assembly members? Seeing none, thank you so much, Kate, for the presentation. As you mentioned, you were send out the link for the presentation there. We greatly appreciate that. We can distribute that to the assembly.
Sure. Do you want me to pop it? I can send it to you directly, and I can also put two links in the chat. One is to the webpage on cornell.edu, and the other is to a downloadable PDF, which is what we're looking at on the screen right now.
That would be great. If you could put those into the chat there, I can copy and paste them in.
Absolutely. And if anyone has a unit or a department or even just questions as an individual, you are more than welcome to reach out to me. We're happy to come and talk with any folks on campus about the snapshot or other topics, and we're always glad to help people make their way and their connections to organizations in the greater community.
Thank you very much, Kate, for being here. We greatly appreciate that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, with that, folks, we'll move on to our open forum items, and now I'll turn to Richard Bensel on the update for the Cornell faculty teach-in.
We're proceeding with the organization of the teach-in. There will be a short message distributed to all of you after the assembly adjourns today. The basic thing is that we have a lineup of presenters, and we have topics. We're aiming at a late date in April. And we're still looking for, we have some sponsors, but we're looking for more sponsors so we can line up space. But you'll get all of this in a memo that'll be distributed after the meeting today. So, and if you have questions or comments at that time, just write me. So.
Thank you, Richard. And for the sake of time, I would ask folks to direct your questions directly to Richard in response to the memo that he sends out and will send out after the meeting here today. Just a note that we do have a meeting coming up with Liz Davis-Frost, who will be joining us to talk about the free period product initiative. Now we'll move into business of the day. Before we do, I just want to speak not to the next item, but in just in general about the work that we do here in the assembly, and that our role in the assembly is to represent our constituencies as best as we possibly can. And at times we may have conversations where we disagree with other perspectives, and that it's important to disagree with perspectives and not individuals, and not to point out specific individuals as we reach our conversation. I did bring my gavel today. I hope not to have to use it, but ask that we just be respectful and mindful of people coming from different perspectives and different backgrounds as we have our representation here in the assembly. With that, I will move over to James for Resolution 6 on alterations to the Code and Judicial Committee name and function.
Yeah, definitely. So I think since there weren't many questions last time, there's not much more to say besides basically there are two types of changes, the functional changes that are happening to the CJC's role as delineated by the bylaws. So under the under the committee's function, the main previous role was the monitor of the UHRB appointment process and to review UA resolutions. And as I mentioned last time, both of those duties have been kind of overridden or kind of, I guess, written out of the new bylaws or the new student code of conduct. So I just tried to basically keep those functions alive within the contours of the new student code. The first, the function with regard to the UHRP, as it's now known, is going to be basically lending a helping hand whenever needed, as happened earlier this year, basically just to make sure the process runs smoothly. And the second function is going to be kind of as a place for people to go to where there's where when a student or faculty member feels that there's kind of a discrepant treatment within the student code of conduct. So if the code isn't being applied fairly, or if it's being applied to students differently than the values of the code are being applied to the faculty or staff at Cornell, we think that's something that the transition from the campus code of conduct to the student code of conduct has kind of raised concerns about. So I think, or we think that the committee is in a position to address this. And essentially, what the committee will be doing is hearing those kinds of complaints, discussing them in committee, and then bringing forth any pertinent complaints at these kinds of university assembly meetings. So those are the two functional changes. And then in terms of the name itself, obviously the CJC is no longer, it doesn't reflect a kind of inclusive non-judicial process that we are trying to instate within the student code of conduct. So rather than the CJC, we came up with the CCCC, or 4C, I guess, which is the Campus Codes and Conduct Committee. However that will be, however will be known, I guess depends on how it rolls off the tongue, but yeah.
Thank you, James. Do we have questions for James in regards to the Resolution 6? One thing I would note here is that the code and judicial committee is referenced in not just the bylaws, but also in the charter of the university assembly, on that there is a need to address both the charter and the bylaws. And I believe from the perspective of the assemblies that, kind of addressing the charter as the primary kind of driver towards the bylaws may be one approach. That's not to say that we can't do the bylaws prior to doing so, but it does note the concern to, or the need to address just that as well. Is there anything, Gina, you may like to add in regards to that?
If I may, just to clarify, the charter supersedes the bylaws, so and they have to be in agreement. So the caution was perhaps address the charter so that any changes to the bylaws would be in agreement.
Okay.
Thank
you. I'll go with Richard and then to Jacob.
So that's a housekeeping kind of amendment, right? Can we do that now?
Well, the good question that, Richard, as far as a housekeeping amendment, the particular resolution doesn't state anything in regards to the charter, and the verbiage in the charter is different than the bylaws. So there would be, I think it would be challenging for us to workshop the charter. What I might consider or recommend that we look at kind of making that adjustment happen in conjunction with this Resolution 6 and just doing one final sweep of the two documents together to get them to coincide with each other. Gina sent an outline of kind of addressing those items, which would be simple to kind of look through. So that may be one approach.
Would it be possible to just preliminarily approve resolution 6 so we can get the subject matter straight, and then we can with the later resolution address the charters and the bylaws in terms of like formal edits and whatnot?
The resolution is on the floor, and it has been on, has been had time to be reviewed. It can be brought forth for choose here. That does cause some disincongruence with the charter, but I think you all know that I'm a little less rigid with that kind of stuff, and we can adjust as we need to. But I do want to go back to Jacob, who had his hand up there.
You heard something too.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jacob.
Am I good?
You're live.
All right, I'm live. All right. I think that we should first of all, we should pass the resolution today. And in doing so, I believe that we can add a clause that just will say something to the effect of replace where in any of our governing documents, wherever the words campus judicial committee are seen, we can replace it with the new name. And that could be added just by the addition of a simple resolved clause. Because that would be an amendment to the resolution, I'm not sure would be, I think, up to the discretion of the chair, really, ultimately, as to whether or not we would need to bring it back to the floor, or we can simply bypass and vote on it today.
Thank you, Jacob. Duncan had a comment. I'll recognize Duncan and then give it to that.
Yeah, I just wanted to first clarify the point Jacob was making. Jabe, you're requesting we add an additional whereas to Resolution 6, essentially also changing the charter or acknowledging the need to change the charter?
No, so I'm coming at it from the perspective of last year we had changed the name of the campus infrastructure committee. And we had just done that simply by stating in a resolved clause to another resolution, if I'm not mistaken, resolved. And then I don't remember the exact language. I'm sure that I could pull it up here if that's of interest. But something to the effect of resolved wherever in our governing documents the term for this case, campus judicial committee is seen, it is to be replaced with 4C, whatever the new name is, whatever we decide the new name is. So it would resolve it there in conjunction with everything else that's being put forth by Resolution 6.
Yeah. The thing I was thinking of a similar vein was just to simply say this won't be formally enacted until there's also been an introduction of a charter change, or there won't formally be changes to the bylaws until that's been changed. That way we can still pass the resolution with the understanding of that. Or even simply just saying this won't be affected until some day in April or May, whenever we meet, if we think we can get that kind of legislation done by then, if that's easier. But I'm not against that as well. I just think some sort of acknowledgement, either that this won't take effect until the charter is also in agreement, or changing the governing ducts as a whole would make more sense logistically with this, personally.
If I can comment to your question, Jacob, you know, as far as an amendment to this would be allowed to be made here on the floor and be passed, I do think that it is a little more complicated than a copy and paste. There are some just verbiage in the charter that are just different than they are in the bylaws. So, you know, it may be something where a resolved clause that just states, you know, something along the lines of that, in addition to the items noted here, that the charter will be amended to effectively represent the items noted here in this resolution. That would allow us just to note that it does need to be done. I don't think, you know, I mean, I guess there's challenge of the charter supersedes the bylaws. So it also may be better to look at, as Duncan said, to kind of put the two in harmony with each other and include the actual verbiage of the changes to the charter. So I'll leave it to the floor in that perspective.
Gina, do you have any perspective on that?
The only thing I would add is that procedurally, the UA can amend its own bylaws, but the president of the university has to approve changes to the charter.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So that's good perspective. Thank you, Gina. Yes, Richard.
So I think with that in mind, we can pass this, amending our bylaws, and automatically they don't take effect until the charter is changed. So they'd just be two steps. We wouldn't, I don't think we need a resolve or another whereas or anything.
That's a good point, that it would the charter would supersede the bylaws, and so right. Adjustments to the bylaws won't change the charter. So that may be one way of looking at it. I guess, Thomas?
Well, if I understood Gina correctly, you could say, therefore, be it resolved that the president's office must change the charter. Mm-hmm. Or we request that the president's office change the charter to be consistent with these changes to the committee or something of that nature. Since we can't do that.
And Gina, if I understood that correctly. Perhaps a clarification, when you say the president must, is that by resolution from the university assembly to change that, or the president in action of themselves must change the charter?
Resolutions, amendments to change the charter must be approved by the president.
So as I look at that, then we do have the ability to change the bylaws here, and we do have a responsibility, I think from my perspective, to also adjust the charter, and they can be two separate resolutions that can effectively address the challenges. So with that, I think we are open to being able to approve this resolution as it currently stands, or any adjustments or amendments that may be needed in regards to the resolution.
So I would so move.
Do we have a call to question?
Well, yeah, we can call the question too.
Okay.
Move to call.
We have a call to question from Richard. Do I have a second? Seconded by Jacob. All those in favor of in essence voting on this resolution, please raise your hands or your Zoom hands or placards. Okay, and you good? Got that one? And then those opposed?
Jacob, are you opposing?
He voted.
No, I think so.
Okay. Jacob, Caroline, are you guys opposed?
No, I'm in favor of the resolution. Okay. When you press the yes, it stays up there for a minute.
All right, and then abstentions?
Jacob's voting.
All right, so we call the question now. We vote on the resolution. All those in favor of Resolution 6, as it currently is written, please raise your hands or placards or Zoom yeses.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 5 on one.
And those opposed? And abstentions?
Abstentions?
You have another. Eva, are you abstaining? Yep, two abstentions. Okay. With that, the resolution passes. Thank you very much, James, and the now four C's for the work being done here. And just a note to again look towards the items in the charter. I will ask Regina if you can forward that over to the four C's to look at the adjustments that you made there. All right, with that, we'll move to resolution number 7, establishing the first Tuesday of November each year as Election Day, a Cornell University recognized civic holiday. And I will turn it over to the sponsors.
Hey, everybody. First, I'd like to note two quick amendments, very mild. One is to the title in line one. I'm going to motion to amend, I'm going to do them together, so I'll say them both now. To instead of saying of each year as election day, amend it to say in the quotations, Cornell Civic Holiday. So instead of election day, Cornell Civic Holiday. And then just a clerical one as well on line 3 in the co-sponsors. It should say Patrick J. Mailer, 23, president of Cornell Votes, not former president of Cornell Votes. So cut former from line 3 and change election day on line 1 to Cornell Civic Holiday.
Now we'd entertain from not the sponsors a motion to make those amendments.
Move.
So moved by Richard. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Annalie. Any objections? Seeing none, the motion passes to amend as stated.
Awesome. Beyond that, I think we've had a lot of really good discussion, obviously. a lot of discussion about this resolution. I'd like to continue having some good discussion, is my hope. But I think truly to speak on the importance of things such as civic involvement, such as voting, especially from the perspective of many of the people who are most affected by this, the largest population on our campus, undergraduate students, I've brought some members of Cornell Votes to share their perspective if they'd like, to add any more on this resolution if they'd like, and give context before we kind of enter this dialogue. To remind you all, obviously this is a resolution asking for a day to recognize the importance of many things, of community, of engagement, of democracy in elections, of even just getting involved and giving your time and supporting other people. And I really hope we can frame the discussion in the people that are going to be affected, in the positive aspects that this could bring to drive civic engagement in our community and at Cornell, something I think a lot of us really are sitting here for, that brought us here, not just University Assembly, also in Cornell, and what I think is a really important part of our university's experience. So with that, I'll hand it off to any of the other members of Cornell Votes or co-sponsors if they want to speak to it first.
If I may jump in, for the sake of time, we do have a number of items on the agenda. I'd love to hear from the Assembly members and any thoughts and perspective, and if we do have time to allow, we would invite those visiting members to speak.
If you prefer, I would go through that. I would just like to recognize that they have given their time to work on this resolution and show their support for it.
Thank you, Duncan. So I'll turn to the Assembly members for any comments, questions. I recognize Jacob.
Yeah, so I just wanted to take a minute. I was going to email him, but I felt that because I had not attacked or, well, been harsh towards his comment last week publicly, I wanted to address it publicly. That's only fair. So I wanted to just apologize to James for getting a little bit personal with this. I hope he understands that, you know, I was nothing I said was out of malice, and I wanted to just apologize that that's not the way that I wanted to express my feelings in that sort of manner of kind of yelling and screaming there a little bit. But that doesn't take away necessarily from the fact that I believe that this resolution is really, really critically important. I think that Patrick has done a phenomenal job. An ancestor of immigrants to this country who fled persecution in other countries, I have always grown up with the notion that the right to vote is something that is sacred. Truly sacred, and in that right, being able to allow all people the opportunity to go vote, because that's what we're really advocating for here, is the opportunity to go vote. I think the notion that someone who is so disengaged in the democratic an election, and they don't understand, or they haven't been following the candidates, that they are going to suddenly show up to go vote on election day if we make it a civic holiday is kind of a logical fallacy. I think that the point of the resolution is simply to allow folks who otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity but would want to go vote, and they wouldn't have that opportunity because of a number of different things, and to allow them to go vote is really critically, critically important. So that's why I really just stress the importance of this resolution and hope that we can all come together and recognize really the sacredness of voting in this country and allowing everyone the opportunity to go vote. We're not mandating anyone to go vote.
Thank you, Jacob. Any other Assembly members?
We had a lot of discussion. Yeah.
I recognize Thomas.
I guess I have to talk to this from a faculty perspective, and certainly there is, I don't think, anybody on the faculty who doesn't like the idea of getting more students out to vote. I have to say, personally, I question whether having a day off would actually increase the number of students who go vote. What I guess might really make a difference, because I'm trying to come up with the nearest polling place for students on campus. I don't know where it is. But rather than a day off, if the university organized transportation, it might actually have a much bigger effect. And of course, we on the faculty have issues with canceling classes, especially in the middle of the week, and this is a holiday that's going to be on a Tuesday every year, which throws a lot of lab courses that are taught on one in my department, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, into some chaos, because what do we do with those Tuesday people? And we can't just shift them to Monday because there's prep work and the prep people don't come in on Sundays. It's a complicated issue. And so while I have absolutely no objection to the motivation for this thing, I can't vote to support it as it's currently written, to just introduce a new holiday in the middle of a week like that. I just am unconvinced that the increase in voting would be as significant as you would expect. I know that you voting went up from 16 to 20 by 20%, and I'm sure your activities had a lot to do with that. I also suspect that the fact that Donald Trump was running for re-election had a lot to do with that. It motivated a lot of people to vote on both sides, actually. So I just have to bring this practical issue up. The main point of the university is not simply to promote elections, and days off, we've had a similar discussion in another context already, and it's problematic. And so the real benefits of it have to be ironclad, and I'm just unconvinced that that's true, especially with, if we ever get, we hope, mail-in voting in the state as a routine. I'm not sure what the status of that is now legally, but that would make a real difference.
Thank you, Thomas. I'll allow the sponsors to respond or yield to one of our visitors, and then Marcy, I see your hand up
now. Yeah, I'd love to yield to Patrick for this. Sure. So you bring up a lot of great points, and I'd love to go through them. The first is we already do busing, and we've done busing for every day with TCAD, with the early voting and with Election Day. Even still, we struggle. Polling sites is a state battle and a county battle that we've continuously been a part of. I know you're just asking about mail-in voting. It failed referenda, which means that we still have to have excuses for absentee voting, mm-hmm. and you still can't do same-day voter registration. In terms of Tuesday, Thursday, I know that's something we really think about a lot, is it is a Tuesday, middle of the week, and we know that that creates a harm. We intend to add Thursday either at the start or at the end of the calendar year in coordination with the registrar so that Tuesday, Thursday, Friday cycles are not messed up in any way. So we're not trying to create a day off. We're trying to create a day on. And something I'd really love to just draw some attention to is that this isn't just for people to vote. It happens to be on Election Day, but this really is intended to be a day of service. If folks remember Into the Streets from a couple of years ago, especially with our brand new Einhorn Center, which we have had lots of funding, but not lots of space to use that funding yet, we now have a great opportunity to connect hundreds of organizations throughout Cornell that are dedicated to service and giving them a window to not just talk about voting, but I think especially to the Hong Kong folks who really trying to push democracy in another way, right? They may not be able to do it here. They may be DACA. They may be undocumented. They may be international. There are other ways to be civically engaged besides voting specifically on Election Day. And so what we're trying to propose is not just a day to vote. It is a day to vote for folks who are able to. And that's especially important for faculty and staff when we have long polling lines and we have very difficult for people to be able to even get to the polls in the first place. But we're trying to create a day of service for everybody in the community, and we're correlating that with Election Day so that people have the opportunity for the most basic service in our country, which is voting. And just one last thing you were saying, you know, that turnout increase in sort of 2020, I by no means am ever going to compare Amelie to Trump, but in the we put all of our energy that we did in the federal for the fall of 2020 right into the SA elections in the spring and fall then. We saw a 33% increase in voter turnout in the spring and a 31% increase in voter turnout in the fall. People want to be engaged. It's not for us a question of people wanting to be engaged. It's how do we engage them and how do we give them an avenue to take this energy and put it right back into the community.
Thank you very much. And for the record, please say your name.
Sorry, I'm Patrick Mamel.
Thank you, Patrick.
He's the first sponsor on the sheet.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that Casey had that when she was taking that. All right, and then now I will turn to Marcy on Zoom.
Hi, yes, thank you. I'm Marcy, and I just wanted to, I really think it's a great idea. I'd love to see more involvement or even more, any type of, you know, anything to get more people to vote and also vote early. I mean, we still have early voting. I don't see that as going away. I think more something about absentee ballots. A lot of students don't live in Ithaca. I know it's not all about voting that day, but getting the message out. But I think the message needs to go out earlier than Election Day. There are other holidays that are, you know, that are geared to civic, you know, community involvement. But I think it's a great idea, but I just don't know if I support this resolution the way it is. Just to having a day off. Staff already has a days off. I know this isn't geared for staff, but we're affected by the, as a staff member, we are affected by the days off. So I don't support it as it's written, but I love the idea of it, and I'd love it to see it as a national holiday. But yes.
It'll be a weekend. Thank you, Marcy. I recognize Duncan.
Marcy, I appreciate your comments there, especially about the importance of voting. On this, I think you should know, I'm trying to find the exact spot where it comments on this, but this is something that would directly affect faculty, staff as well, not simply students. I think that's important in recognizing in this. I'm not students, it's fine. I would mention that I think trying to say this, it makes most sense. I think this really is not about a national conversation about should people vote. I think we're trying to have really more space for elections, really more space for involvement, engagement. And I think that's as much an issue for many staff members as it is for students. We're merely just trying to draw attention to that. I'd like to, if possible, give a chance for other members of Cornell Vote to speak to this, because this is a conversation that's been going on for a while, if any of them have comment on that as well. Marcy, because I would love to hear about your, you know, if you genuinely have concerns, right? I think there are people here who want to answer those.
Anyone care about Patrick Mallett?
Yeah, I'm more than happy to speak to that. I think for us, something we think about is you were just saying that Cornell has sort of other service-oriented holidays, but I can't think of one that people are here for. I mean, we intentionally don't have any activities on MLK Day, and that occurs during the spring break. While many of the universities across the country have a day on for service, we just kind of let people go about their sorority rush still during that same time. And so I think Cornell has great potential for a day service. I think we have huge, huge strides to take in being reconnected with all the different service organizations and partners within Ithaca and Tompkins County, and even just within our community in Cornell. But I really think that that we're not the first to even propose this. I mean, that's something that comes to mind a lot is Brown just did this in 2020. Stanford has just done it as well. Columbia's had it for decades. It's not a novel idea for us to have Election Day off, but it is a novel idea for us to turn that into a day of service. And what I would really love to see Cornell as a leader is saying that we don't just give people, we're not trying to give a day off, we're not trying to create an excuse for people not to work, but they have an important priority that at the moment, our state and national governments are failing to live up to. And as long as we don't have the protections in place from those entities, we as Cornell and as a community should be creating those protections for each other.
Thank you, Patrick. I'll recognize Marcy.
Sorry. So I think usually Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a day of service. I think they've also said September 11th is although not necessarily a holiday, but they asked that to be a day of service. Also, New York State, as I mentioned in the last meeting, New York State does give staff 2 hours off to vote. So if you aren't able to vote or get to the election polls during that time, you are given two hours a day. 2 hours of that day to vote as well. Just answer a couple questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcy. Any more questions from the assembly members? I'll recognize James and then Jacob.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to thank and accept Jacob's apology. no hard feelings. I appreciate the passion you showed last meeting. But I just have a question about the resolution. So if I understand it correctly, the idea is that because a substantial portion of the Cornell population isn't, you know, they aren't American citizens, the theory is that they'll use the day to, you know, politically canvass or advocate in their home country, essentially. Is that the idea?
I can kind of speak briefly to that. I don't think that was anyone's intention in writing this resolution, mm-hmm. nor is, I think, that truly a question brought up in this resolution. I think an opportunity for civic engagement to many people means many different things. So maybe a student who feels very politically engaged in their home country, that could mean that. But I in no way think that is implied nor part of this resolution as it's actually written.
Right. So it's just, a side effect or a bonus in your eyes?
In my eyes, I think a civic holiday, a chance to engage in whatever you feel is your important calling towards something like that is yours and yours own. I'm not going to try and define that for other people, but I do think there are going to be many, many great opportunities available to Cornell students through the Einhorn Center, none of which I can comment, nor does this resolution specifically name.
I'm just wondering if that's a main concern or a side concern of the resolution, if it's necessary to designate a holiday during the week, like on a Tuesday, as Thomas said, where, you know, any bit of free time could be used on the weekends or on any other holiday to form that same function or purpose from those foreign students.
Yeah, and in this resolution, again, it in no way comments on other students' international engagements, or anyone's engagements of that matter, I might add. And I could, if you can point to a specific line that you feel might suggest that this is a side or might imply that's a bonus, we can discuss that in great detail.
Well, I'm just going off of what you guys, how you framed it.
So yeah, I'm sharing a perspective based off of the writing of the resolution. With that in mind, I would say any student's involvement in civil engagement is theirs and theirs alone and takes on a lot of time and a lot of burden. This opens the door for additional support of that while also increasing access to the basic rights we've kind of laid out here in this conversation so far around voting. I don't necessarily think that I think this is very neutral in that kind of comment you're making. I don't necessarily disagree with it, but I don't think it's an assertion that's in this resolution at all.
Okay. But I'd like to move to Jacob Navarrete's hand up there. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, I was just going to actually add on to what Patrick had mentioned a few moments ago, and that point really is the sense that that civic engagement extends far beyond just the ability to go vote and the actual physical act of going to vote. Civic engagement also it takes the form of being involved and making sure that, you know, I as somebody who is more focused on policy and government here at Cornell, even within the sciences, I'm exposed to this weird intersection of students where really a beautiful intersection of students, I should change my statement there, where we have folks who are super politically engaged, super galvanized by the political process. And then we have folks who are very hard science. And in a lot of my hard science courses, students might not be very politically engaged, whether it's in a physics course or in a statistics course or what have you. That I've taken, or a computer science course, for example, and being good citizens, and not even being good citizens, but I personally believe that being a citizen of a country requires you to be engaged, right? My home senator Cory Booker reminds us often that politics is not a spectator sport, right? We have to all be engaged, regardless of what side of the political aisle you're on, and that's why I really think that not only is this concept of a civic holiday important for advocating the right for students to go vote and facilitating that action, but also for getting people involved. And if we want to consider perhaps even moving it up a week or two, while simultaneously incorporating as it currently exists, as Patrick had mentioned, that transportation option for folks on election day, that would be, I think that would actually help. And we can work and figure out a day that doesn't conflict with the current calendar in order to allow folks to be informed, to be engaged prior to election day, ideally before they have to maybe register to go vote. Maybe they live in New York State and they just haven't registered to go vote yet. They you know, back home, I know for me, as is typical in New Jersey, you register to go vote by graduation is typically how it's done in the public school system there. But for some students, that might not be the case. And so, and not pushing them to go and register to vote here in Ithaca, but register to vote where they're from is really important. So I think that that is another perspective that we've kind of missed here, but I wanted to highlight that because Patrick had brought it up, and I think it's really important.
Thank you, Jacob. I do want to just be mindful of time that we do have. We did not get to assembly reports and a Senate report. I want to make sure we have time to do that. So just be mindful of brevity. Yes, Jake.
So I wanted to touch on the point that Jacob made, but going off what I was saying previously, it seems like the resolution would only be able to help, you know, as it's currently written, would only be able to help a small subset of the Cornell population, which would be U.S. citizens or students who are U.S. citizens registered to vote in the state of New York who didn't request a mail-in ballot before the election and who also would not have been able to make it to the polls without this holiday. I don't know if such a small subset of Cornell's student population is, you know, would justify an entire holiday. But I do kind of like Jacob's point about possibly moving it forward a couple weeks and maybe not necessarily making a holiday in terms of canceling classes or anything like that. In terms of making it maybe civic engagement week is, you know, 2-3 weeks before election day on each year, and the school actively encourages New York residents to request mail-in ballots, or, you know, all students request mail-in ballots. I think that would be a lot more probably pragmatic and useful in terms of maximizing the entire student population's voting potential.
I'll give the sponsors an opportunity to respond, and then I'll turn to Jessica.
Yeah, personally, I don't think that assertion necessarily was what Jake was making by saying that we could go and look to other ways to get people involved as well. I think that's kind of exactly the reason there are students like Cornell Votes, and that's exactly how we got voter turnout so high, was because we didn't have these resources, so students found ways they could to increase that. I would similarly push back directly on the idea that this is a small subset of students affected. I think also, at first, just as the University Assembly, I don't think that's ever affected any of our conversations before, the number of students affected. You know, we're directly having conversations, even in this own meeting, about committees. We're having conversations about students based on international identity. We're having conversations about a lot of things. Last week we talked about pools. I've never gone swimming here. But if we're gonna have, you know, that's millions of dollars. No, I'm a transfer student. So yeah. I actually swam. I swam a little bit in elementary school. So yeah, I'm pretty good with it, with the backstroke. So. But that's not really relevant here. I think it's just also worth noting that this is really an opportunity for service for the few students who aren't affected, right? If the concern is, you know, we're a majority American institution, we're a majority voting institution, we're a majority institution where there's majority student institution, right? A lot of these like core principles you said are limiting factors to it. Are in many cases literally the majority of people on our community directly affected by this. It's the first thing. I push back on the idea that this is just limited to that. We've had this whole conversation around the idea of a day of service and a day of a civil holiday, and especially one that would be in reflection to available to students, right? Not something on Martin Luther King Day, a day when we're all on vacation, not something on 9/11. Well, personally, I'm a family member affected by 9/11. Directly, that is for many people, including myself, a day of reflection, not necessarily a day for service, but also something we do have institution activities on. And it's not even a day off. If it's really a, you know, we talked about this, the addition of a Thursday that would accompany this along with that. But to that point, Tom, to your fear, I'd say this isn't a conversation that's happened in an echo chamber. And I would recognize that the a lot of the work on this, a lot of the names put forward here in connection with this are not just the people who've been in the conversations around this. And this is not something that's done solely in a vacuum. So I would caution against limiting this to say it's only affecting a small amount of people. And also to caution this and being against the resolution for fears of lack of effect or lack of benefit to the community, because I think the benefit is unmeasurable. I think the true amount of students affected is really unquantifiable in the room currently with the conversations being had. And I think unless we recognize really an opportunity along with this of service and civil engagement, you're kind of missing a good chunk of the language in here. So I recommend anyone kind of read over that if they have questions specifically about that. Or possibilities of that. If not, I can turn back to members of the Cornell Votes community, the people who've been literally working with ways we can get more involved But I think, you know, this doesn't have to be a comment on elections. This doesn't have to be a comment on students' ability to serve. I think it can be genuinely about ways that we can get people more involved in supporting our communities and supporting our institutions.
Thank you, Duncan. I'll recognize Jessica and then Ollie.
I apologize that I missed the original conversation, and I want to simply echo Thomas's comment about courses. I'm glad you're thinking about ways to.
Well, we're not just thinking about it. Yeah, I can turn back to Patrick and turn back to Cornell Votes. I've not been in the room for those conversations, but I can assure you this is not something that's made in vain, nor is it there's not a comment made in vain, nor is it something that is not going to be considered by the administration. I'm not going to come up for that. Yeah.
And Marcy Abley presented all the thoughts I had in my head as I walked over here today, so I don't need to repeat them, but just so you know, I echo those. And I think it's, I love the idea. I don't know that it would, if it passed, that it would get what you wanted, but I do like the idea and I appreciate the intention behind it.
Well, I think from that perspective, I think it's important that we recognize that, again, this is not something that is just being floated around. This is something where, you know, we want a day on. We want people to work with that. And I would turn back to Patrick's previous statement, very clearly addressing that. To the point of any sort of just supporting the sentiment of it, I think this is a really good opportunity to put really a lot of institutional support behind that. Because I think it's really easy to have conversations where we want to support these things. But I think until we recognize that there are students who are having these issues, faculty and staff members having these issues with getting out and voting and getting involved in the community, we can't actually fix them. And I think this resolution tries to address that.
Thank you. I'll turn to Holly.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask, like, just to the General Assembly, I feel like a lot of the sentiment, like, on this resolution has been, like, yeah, we really like the idea, but, like, we can't support it in, like, this current form, or we don't like the way that it looks right now. So I'm just kind of curious on, like, what the resolution could look like in a space where, like, you all would feel, like, comfortable passing it. And then also, like, on top of that, like, what are your representative bodies, like, thinking about this? I know the Student Assembly, we just passed this resolution, so I know, like, I can speak pretty confidently, like, saying that students are in support. Like, has this come up in, like, Faculty Senate or Employee Assembly or anything along those lines, and like what have the discussions looked like in those bodies?
So perhaps we would turn to those that haven't been represented in that.
And GPSA, region. Sorry, yeah. I'd like to mention that as well.
So, Jacob, you had your hand up earlier. You'll give me a move for this. I'll turn to James then.
Yeah, just to answer Emily's question, I would support something that wasn't necessarily an entire day off. Just because, you know, I mentioned the Civic Engagement Week a couple of weeks before Election Day, I think is a good possibility. Just because there are so many holidays that do exist that we have overlooked, you know, the school doesn't give the day off for. I think just to, you know, it's kind of heavy-handed to say, because some students might be affected or might be helped by this, we're going to, you know, cancel school for the entire student population. And even you might frame it as a day of service, I completely, you know, agree with and you know, sympathize with the sentiment. But at the end of the day, undergraduate and graduate students who are, you know, given a day off for any reason are going to treat it as, I think, as any other holiday for the most part. And I mean, touching on my earlier point, I wasn't just saying that, you know, it's only U.S. citizens. You know, you have to think there's the student population this is aimed at, and then you subtract the foreign students, and then you subtract the students who are registered to vote out of state, such as myself. And they subtract the students who mailed in their votes to New York State or who aren't registered in New York State, and then the students who would have gone to vote anyway. I think you end up with probably a negligible percentage of the student population who's going to be actually helped by this. And that's why I think it's a great idea. It's just a little bit heavy-handed to cancel the entire school day for a small subset, considering that other holidays are overlooked by the school and by, you know, the national holidays themselves.
Thank you, James. I'm going to turn to Eve, who has a hand up here on Zoom.
I also wanted to directly respond that I think I love the sentiment and the spirit of the resolution, and I really like the idea of having a week of civic engagement and getting people to go out there and advocate for whomever's running and to try to get people to get their absentee ballots. I think all of those things would be wonderful, but I don't think that we need a day off to vote, especially with the fact that the employees already receive extended time to vote on that day if needed. So it hasn't been brought to the Senate.
Thank you, Eve. And Annalia, I just want to just note again that we are running long on this conversation and just being mindful that it's been, from my perspective, many folks have weighed in on their perspectives here. So unless we're adding to the conversation with new thoughts or perspectives, I might entertain a motion to either table or call the question. So I'll recognize Annalia.
You can pass me.
Good, Tom.
I just want to make one thing very clear. I understand completely that you're not suggesting another day off. You want to move the day to another week. There's no question that you're not looking for another day off. I understand that. My trivial point is that classes that run Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the same class every day, screwing up a week, you can't just add a day and get that back. Maybe that's worth sacrificing, maybe it isn't. But I understand completely that it's not looking for time off.
Thank you for clarifying that, Tom. I misspoke.
Should I have Jacob before for as he raises his hand as well?
Jacob, did you want to speak?
Yeah, I think that we've all raised a lot of really good points here, and I think that you know, assessing the sentiment in the room or the virtual room, it's not going to pass in its current form, and that would be just counterproductive to everyone's time, everyone's efforts. I'm going to make a motion to table this resolution, and I'm actually going to make a motion to not only table but send it to a committee, the Campus Welfare Committee, so we can have further conversations, kind of workshop the resolution there, so it can be brought back to the Assembly for something that's more conducive to facilitating the goals that Patrick and then myself, the rest of the sponsors had in mind.
Thank you, Jacob. I have a motion to table to send to committee. Do I have a second?
I'd like the second. Can I make a comment before I second that?
Oh, well, wow, yeah.
Thank you. I've introduced, I think, maybe five or six, not that many, but probably three or four resolutions now at this point. I really appreciate people's honesty with me about it, because I think really one of the reasons I tried to get involved in student government is just to be honest when it comes to problems, when it comes to solutions, when it comes to my constituents. I'm currently sitting here as only one of three undergraduate students, actually as a University Assembly voting member. There's two more positions, neither of which I feel confident in saying are full, but I don't think that's really appropriate for me to comment on. This is a large constituency. This is the largest group of people on this campus. These are people who live here. These are people who work here. These are people who study here. These are people from every single continent and from every single state, I think except for one was in Martha's Point. And these are people who care a lot about this institution. And I've seen all of you care just as well. I've seen all of you stand up for the constituencies you represent. I've seen all of you comment for the constituencies you represent. I've seen all of you make incredible points about your own beliefs and your own disagreements with many of these resolutions. I'm just going to say this, just frankly, if you agree with the sentiment, and find a solution. I have students who are coming to me who are saying, I can't vote because I have XYZ assignments. I have students who say, I want to get involved in service. I did 200 hours, 300 hours in high school, but now I have to pay my student loans, so I have to get a job. I've heard students who have tried and tried and tried to find ways to get involved in institutions like this because they think that is civil engagement. I've seen students who march and protest and rally for what they believe is civil engagement. I've seen students who can't even get to the polls because they don't have, or excuse me, I've seen students who go out and respond and volunteer at the polls because they think that is student engagement. But I've also seen the inverse. I've seen students who can't do that, who can't get to that. And I'm sure there's some of your constituents just as well that you're just as connected with. And I know you all know that this is a concern. I've heard you all say you agree with the sentiment. As this goes to the welfare committee, please show up, comment, say why you what you want to see instead. because I'm not bringing this forward because I'm sitting in my room thinking we need a day off. I'm not going and walking around campus looking at the trash can saying, damn, it'd be cool if this had a solar panel. I'm doing these because I'm hearing students' concerns. An underrepresented really organization just with the current makeup of this assembly, but a constituency that's just as vocal as all of yours and just as concerned and just as passionate. So I welcome you to please get involved with those committees. Please get involved with these resolutions if you feel that the sentiment is true. Thank you.
I recognize Annalie. Again, we have a motion on the floor that has been brought forth and looking for a second on that or otherwise.
Yeah, sorry. I don't want to interrupt the motion. But I just wanted to say, and seconding a lot of what Duncan said, is like, I don't think that you can agree with the sentiment here and then also be against the resolution. Like, if you disagree with the resolution, you disagree with the resolution. And that doesn't mean that you're like anti-voting or anti-civic engagement on campus, but I think a lot of times, like, as representatives, we show the work that we're doing through the way that we're voting. So if you're disagreeing with the resolution, I would love, and I think Tom's doing a great job today of like explaining to us like the reasons why he's against this resolution or things that we could do to change and adapt it in a way that I feel like I haven't really seen in other representatives. And I also would just say that like this is a lot of work. Like Patrick has been working on this for a year and a half. Just like meeting with people and meeting with representatives of the university is like, go back to your constituents, see what they disagree with in this resolution, and then bring it back to our floor so that we can like have like a really healthy discussion, because I think a lot of people are taking this from personal views. With that, I second Jacob's motion.
We have a second to move to the Welfare Committee. I'll go ahead and ask for a vote on this. All those in favor of moving to the Welfare Committee, please raise your placards or your Zoom hands. And those opposed? And abstentions? That the motion passes, correct, Casey? All right, we'll move that back to the Welfare Committee. Thank you all for the very healthy and robust conversation. And I would second what Duncan has said. And sending to committee does not dissolve our responsibility as an organization to speak to this item. That just further necessitates your perspectives continue to be brought forth to that committee. With that, now we'll move on to our new business here, Resolution 8. And I will turn to Ian to present Resolution 8.
Thanks, Brandon. I'm going to do this in 5 minutes because I know we all want to get out of here. And luckily, it's pretty brief. So after last week's University Assembly meeting, the site committee met and discussed many of the concerns that we discussed here at the University Assembly. Two of the concerns that I think were expressed the most was that Resolution 3, as written, did not really discuss specific quantifiable data on what the actual impact to Cornell University would be. And also there was a concern that, you know, the smart waste receptacle proposal might not integrate holistically with the broader campus waste management and sustainability strategy. So following the meeting, the co-sponsors of Resolution 3 drafted new language in consultation with Valerie Amer, who's a member of the site committee, to address these concerns, which forms the bulk of Resolution 8. The core of Resolution 8 is two operative provisions, which prescribe the framework for both a net cost as well as a carbon emission impact scoring for the smart waste proposal that's described in Resolution 3. They're short, and I think they best speak for themselves, so I'm just going to briefly read them aloud to the assembly. And for those of you who want to follow along, this begins on line 55 of Resolution 8. Be it therefore resolved, Cornell University shall form a working group comprised of representatives from the Department of Facilities Management, the Office of the University Architect, the Department of Energy and Sustainability, the Department of Finance and Administration, and the various Cornell assemblies to study the efficacy of updating the university's outdoor waste management infrastructure to include the incorporation of smart waste receptacles. The working group shall be charged with, but not limited to, developing an accurate representation of the location of all waste receptacles on the university's Ithaca campus, determining the frequency with which these outdoor waste receptacles are serviced, determining the weekly fuel and labor cost rate associated with servicing such receptacles, projecting and evaluating the differential fuel and labor cost rate associated with replacing existing outdoor waste receptacles with smart waste receptacles, and considering the holistic integration of smart waste receptacles into the broader infrastructure and sustainability strategy of the university. Be it further resolved that should such a working group conclude that the general replacement of existing waste receptacles throughout the university's Ithaca campus with smart waste receptacles will likely result in a net reduction in fuel and labor required to service waste from outdoor receptacles, as well as a net reduction in the university's carbon emissions compared to the current baseline, the university shall develop and implement a plan to update the university's existing waste receptacle infrastructure in a manner that comports with the working group's findings. And that's basically the core of Resolution 8.
Thank you very
much. I'll entertain questions.
Thank you very much, Ian. Just to note here, we're looking at this in an edited view. Obviously, that would be cleaned up before it was finally brought forth for conversation. And I just want to, again, be mindful of time. I want to make sure we do get to Assembly and Senate, because as we all know, this will be brought forth here with opportunity between now and the next meeting to provide feedback. But with that, I'll turn to the floor and I'll recognize Jason.
Yeah, so this, I think, embodies what is so great about the University Assembly, in that we can work together to collaborate and come up with something that is self-sustaining. A lot of us aren't going to be here next year to continue working on this. And the attention shifts over time. But I think that waste management is something that is so inherently critical to our sustainability goals, and it needs to have a sustained focus. As we've seen, as we've discussed seemingly ad nauseum here, that the focus has kind of shifted and waned over the years, and understandably so. I mean, new priorities come up and things kind of get pushed back in terms of our focus and our agenda. And you know, probably most frequently, folks just they aren't the same people anymore that are working on these committees. So this is critical in really making sure that we can sustain this work moving forward. I don't want to rush anything here. I think that when I first drafted the resolution, when myself and the co-sponsors had brought forth this the original resolution, Resolution 3, we did not want to rush it. We didn't want to just push something through, have it be voted on and then turned down by the president, or worse, in my opinion, would be to push something through, have it implemented, and then have it backfire on us and actually become worse for the environment. And I think that a lot of the disagreement over the past few weeks has come from the fact that we're working on different perspectives and maybe are not agreeing on the same experiences. And I think that a lot of that disagreement or lack of perspective comes from the fact that we are simply don't have the statistics or the data, the context with which we can evaluate our perspectives. There doesn't really exist a lot of information on where a lot of our waste is coming from and how it's handled and a lot of the flaws and what sorts of waste, whether it's plastic, paper, metal, where we need to invest more money into actually making sure that those recycling processes are more efficient. So this would not only sustain the interest, but also make the focus of this resolution more research-based, more empirical, so that we can actually have informed decision-making moving forward, whether it's by the end of the semester or next year or a few years from now, that will really self-sustain a more efficient process for managing and handling our waste. My apologies, I'm getting a million messages on the side. I hope that's not disruptive. I also wanted to also bring your attention to the fact that we have folks from the campus sustainability's office here. And I think that in speaking with members of faculty, namely Caroline, who I respect greatly, and we had an awesome conversation offline, we've got to engage these folks. We have to bring all these parties to the table in order to really come up with something that is substantive here. I've been examining our approach over the past few weeks, and I've noticed that there are serious flaws in the way that we're doing this. And I think that just speaks to the fact that this is ultimately, from my perspective, the greatest learning experience that I've gotten here at Cornell has been serviced through the assemblies. You know, sometimes you just got to take a step back and understand and readdress what are the goals here. And remaining stuck in your ways sometimes undermines your ultimate goals. So I'm happy to let the folks from the sustainability department speak, and I would love to hear the thoughts of the members of the assembly.
Thank you, Jacob. Jessica has her hand up, and then I'll give opportunity. Go ahead, Jessica, and then to Thomas.
I really like the evolution of this resolution. I have a very quick question. Do you think there should be an end date or a report back date for the working group?
I mean, I think there probably should be, but, you know, I think that I don't think I am sufficiently informed on the scope of what this data gathering would entail and how long it would take to make that recommendation of that date myself. But I think a target goal of when this should be completed by to keep people on track would be a good idea, yes.
Thank you. And to Thomas?
I just wanted to say that this makes a lot of sense to me. I'm 100% behind it.
And Richard, and then to Jacob?
Yeah, same thing. I like the resolution. Yeah, it's a conversation is what this was always about.
Thank you, Richard. I will just, before I turn to you, Jacob, I will extend that offer, as you stated, for our folks in the sustainability office to just provide any additional items that they would care to. So I'll turn over to Sarah Brylinski. Sarah B.
Hi, everyone. Sarah Brylinski, Assistant Director in the Campus Sustainability Office. I do really like the evolution of this resolution. I saw the first draft and have had several conversations with the authors. A small point of order suggestion that I would make is we have a governing committee that sets priorities each year, the Sustainable Cornell Council. And the way that we move work forward for those priorities is to create a working group. So what you propose in this resolution is, in essence, a working group to look at waste priorities and an assessment of opportunities. I would recommend that we officially make this or look to connect it to the Sustainable Cornell Council. And there is a process within that group to do an initial assessment and then create a timeline for a report. So it gives us an opportunity as a campus to look at some of these critical areas where we have room to grow and improve the sustainability of our waste management and do so with the offices and the individuals that have now been added as key partners in this resolution. And within a structure, the Sustainable Cornell Council, that has a codified process for sort of reviewing, approving, and moving things forward at a higher institutional level. So I really appreciate the work that's been done to continue to make this something that reflects the real opportunities we have to improve the sustainability of our waste operations. And I would look forward to working with the UA and members on this future committee if this resolution passes.
Thank you very much, Jeremy, and for those joining us here today to hear the comments from the University Assembly. We are close on time. I would entertain a motion to extend the meeting by 10 or 15 minutes if someone would so care to move.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to extend the meeting by 10 or 15 minutes.
we'll go with 15. We have a motion to extend by 15.
Second.
Seconded. Any objections? Seeing none, the meeting is extended. Any additional comments, or would also welcome a motion to table the resolution. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yep, I'd like to make a motion to table the resolution. I would also like, more specifically, I'd like to make a resolution to send it back to the site committee so that we can have the conversations with Sarah and her team to make sure that we can coordinate our efforts, as she had mentioned.
We have a motion to send back to committee. Do I have a second? Seconded by Thomas. Any objections? Seeing none, we'll send it back to the committee. I will echo the sentiments stated here from folks and the appreciation of hearing the feedback and perspective and looking to adjust. I think for those of you who recall back to when I started the role in the chair, this was my goal, is to be able to provide conversation so that we can find common ground, because we have unique perspectives, all of us. And this is a clear and evident demonstration of that. So thank you very much for that, and for the entire conversation this evening was an evidence of that as well. With that, let's make sure we get some assembly and Senate reports this evening. So I will start up, and I will turn over to our student assembly Noni to talk about the student assembly.
Perfect. Pretty quick today, so we had a few resolutions in the last week at the essay. We had a resolution to create a seat on the student assembly for students in the Brooks School. We tabled that resolution. It will probably come up again. Some of the conversation around that is basically how to implement this, especially right now as students are not applying to the Brooks School.
they're still applying to human ecology. So just like understanding like which students are in like which designation right now. So thinking about implementing that probably for our spring elections in 2023. So today came to us about basically just like quick summary. Slope Day usually presents their new artists for the year to the student assembly first, and then it goes to the public. But they are trying to amend their charter and effectively our bylaws to make it that they could have like basically a launch party to like announce who the speaker is going to be. That was tabled, and it'll come back up on the floor this Thursday. So we'll see if we'll be voting on that. We extended petitioning for student assembly elections just to fill more seats. We had some vacancies. And then mostly organized by our freshman representative. They passed a resolution, but we're also just doing work for printers on North Campus. So just to extend and make them more accessible on North Campus. So that's what we did in last week. I can answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Alan? We don't have an update on the Slope Day artist yet?
No, we don't. No. Hopefully, knock on wood in 2 weeks.
All right, and that will turn then to the GPSA. Prestonista, whether I think he had to leave early. Yep, all right. So then we'll then, unless there's someone who would like to present, I'll turn to the employee assembly. Tessa?
So the Employee Welfare Committee has passed the Employee Assembly Resolution in support of the Faculty Senate's Natatorium Resolution. So that will be coming to the Employee Assembly April 6th. We are still accepting nominations for the George Peter Award, and we are about to start the Employee Assembly elections. The nomination platform should be open momentarily. Tomorrow?
Yes.
We had some adjusting to do in the committee. So we're a little bit behind, but those are still aligned. They'll still, the election period will still line up with the employee elected trustee election. So we're good to go on that.
Thank you. Any questions for Jessica? Yes, Thomas.
What is the George Peter Award?
Dedicated service.
Okay. Of an employee.
And it doesn't have to be a long time. Well, 5 years of service. Mm-hmm. And it's a peer nomination. So a staff member has to nominate another staff member. Yes.
So I need to know.
Thank you. I would just add to what Jessica said around the elections that everyone should be focusing on that. I did have a chance to speak with each of the representative constituent leaders that elections need to be completed so that we can bring forth members here to the University Assembly to staff the UA for next year's work. We're getting close to that point, which seems crazy. We're almost there. So thank you very much. Any questions for Jessica? Seeing none, we'll move now to E for the Faculty Senate.
So the faculty are having a forum tomorrow to give further feedback on the part-time bachelor's degree for non-traditional students. There isn't any implementation plan yet, but we want to give as much feedback as possible because of the potential impact on faculty who will presumably be staffing and teaching that program if it moves forward. And our next Senate meeting will be after spring break on April 20th, and so I'll be able to give you guys updates at that time.
Thank you. Do we have an update on the Natatorium Resolution?
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yes, Brandon. It did pass resoundingly with 89 in approval. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact number, but it was something like 7 no's and 32 do not votes and 2 abstains, I think. So it's resounding.
Thank you very much, Eve. Any questions for Eve? All right, seeing none, the executive committee did not meet this week because we met back to back. So, and James has left from the now 4Cs. So I'll turn over to the campus welfare committee.
Yep. Thank you.
So the Campus Welfare Committee has a suggestion or for discussion, so maybe it could be new business next time, about hosting a campus crisis response forum with the Office of University Office of Emergency Response, probably Cornell Police, and other groups. Gina has a whole checklist that she has developed from the UA on how to make a forum happen. So this would be something sponsored by the UA, not necessarily the Campus Welfare Committee. That's the one thing we wanted to bring forward before we run out of meeting times for this semester for consideration here.
Thank you, Deborah. Any questions for Deborah in regards to that? I apologize. I want to backtrack. Eve, I had a question for you. You said there was a forum on the part-time bachelor's program.
Yes.
Did you have a date and a time
for that? Oh, my goodness, yes. It's actually happening tomorrow from 3:30 to 5 o'clock. And if anyone wants to attend, they're welcome to attend. Just reach out to the Office of the Dean of Faculty, and we'll send you the link.
Thank you very much. Sorry, Deborah, I wanted to make sure I got that question in there. Any questions for Deborah in regards to the forum? And I do want to acknowledge that you've asked me to get that on the agenda. We've had pretty full agendas here. So I will commit right here now that we'll get that on the next agenda for us to have.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Next up, site?
No updates beyond those discussed earlier in the meeting.
All right. No updates. Any liaison reports? Seeing none. Welcome any other thoughts or perspective. We are extended up to 6:15, but that doesn't mean we have to go there.
Yes, we adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Ali. All those, any opposed? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much. Great meeting this evening.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.